Alex, I believe I have reached the equivalent of nirvana.
Tell me more.
Well, I have been sleeping on my cozy earth sheets.
Wow.
And when I get up in the morning, I put on my fantastic jogger suit.
Yes.
Which is a funny way to put it, but you started saying that, so I'm just going to keep on going. And it is opening my mind to things I didn't know I could open my mind to.
Casey, all I have to say is, welcome to the other side.
It's incredible, Alex.
I've lived two lives. One of them is before Cozy Earth, and one is after.
Which is right now.
That's right. We're talking Cozy Earth. They make incredible, soft, lovely, temperature-controlled bedding and cozy wear.
Cozy Earth makes the best clothes I think I've ever touched, that have ever touched my skin.
Casey, I'm right there with you.
It's soft, it's breathable, it's temperature regulated, it looks good, it feels good, which makes it good.
And how about this for good? All of their products come with a 100-night sleep trial and a 10-year warranty. So if for some completely batshit reason you don't love these sheets, you can return them.
Now, Alex, right around the corner is Mother's Day. If you haven't already done something, which you should have,
yeah,
now's your moment. Go buy your mom some Cozy Earth, because it is the thing that will help her sleep at night. It's the thing that will help keep her comfortable at all moments of her life. And that's what you want for your mom.
So she isn't up all night thinking about what a disappointment her children are.
Exactly, because they didn't get her Cozy Earth. You don't want to be on that level.
Well, Casey, here's some exciting news. All Completely Arbitrary listeners get 35% off at CozyEarth.com with promo code TREES. Again, that's promo code TREES, T-R-E-E-S, for 35% off at Cozy Earth. So get yourself cozy. Get your mom cozy. Hell, get your dad cozy and your friends cozy.
Yeah, it doesn't have to stop there, you know?
Make the earth cozy with Cozy Earth.
Ah. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
What's up, Fungal Associates? Welcome to Completely Arbitrary, the podcast about trees and other related topics. Happy Triazaki to you all. I am one of your hosts. My name is Alex Croson. And of course, host number dose, Casey Clapp.
Hello, Alex. Hello, everyone out there in the world.
Hello, Casey.
What a beautiful song that is.
It isn't it?
It really is.
It's sort of the honorable mention of this month because Howl's Moving Castle is a fan favorite. All of his films are fan favorites.
Is that a song from that Howl's Moving Castle?
Yes. Gotcha. And so this is sort of like a little accommodation to Howl's and Howl and his moving castle. Happy Triazaki, everybody.
Happy Triazaki, Alex.
Happy Triazaki, Casey.
Thank you.
It's the most wonderful time of the year. What is this? We are doing a month of episodes based on the films by Hayao Miyazaki. Yeah, Casey, have you ever watched a Miyazaki film before this series?
Before last week?
Yeah.
No, I have not.
Amazing.
It is not my my style of film. I tend to... Sure. I mean, I have moved out of the phase of even watching like too many animated things specifically, mm-hmm. but there was Sailor Moon was
sure,
one back
sure.
when I was a kid. And then there was the other Dragon Ball Z.
Uh-huh.
I did not like Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah, just like, not a fan of the anime, Japanese anime style.
I've never been. Yeah, it was always just like very comic book style.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never been drawn to comic books as a style of artistry.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
Right on.
So I watched my first one last week.
Yes.
It was this one, Spirited Away.
That's right, Casey. Well, I'm more familiar with his works than you are.
Yes, but you are like, this is kind of your thing. You are
not,
very into
Not like as much as some people. Mm. I know there are people out there who Studio Ghibli is like their religion,
yeah,
or something.
Yeah,
you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, yeah.
But I am a big fan, and I think that his works are seminal and important and beautiful.
Yeah, I will say the art in the in this movie was really good. I was just like, wow, that's really well done. Like the background, kind of like layered collages of greenery and things. I was
amazing.
Like, man, it's really beautiful.
Yeah. So I went through a phase a few months ago where I was like watching as many of them as I could find on HBO Max.
Really?
Yeah, and I watched both the Japanese version and the English dub version.
Wow.
Because I hate to admit it, but they are different.
Oh no, of course.
Beyond
yeah.
just the dub, you know, like they, it's a complete, it almost feels like a completely different film.
Really?
Yeah, to me. But I'm very excited for Miyazaki Month because Miyazaki, kind of one of the cornerstones of his storytelling, is nature.
Yes.
And humans, specifically humans' relationship with the natural world, mm-hmm. with the spiritual world. And in Japan, these two things are combined.
They're the same.
That's right.
Yeah.
And Casey, I'm very excited to talk about this today because we are talking about Shinto.
Yes.
Now, for people who don't know what Shinto is, can you give us a little tweet version, 140 characters?
Oh, yeah. None of those yeah's count, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Starting now.
Shinto is the indigenous religion of Japan, and it is, I would argue, an analogous to the indigenous spiritual beliefs of Native Americans in the United States prior to European conquest.
Cool.
Essentially, it's animism.
Yes, that's right, Casey. Shinto, we're talking about Shinto today. We're talking about Spirited Away. We're talking about Miyazaki and Studio Ghibli. But we also have some other news.
Yes, we do.
A couple big things, Casey.
Yeah, some big things.
Some big changes at Completely Arbitrary. And one of them, of course, is that we are moving away from Patreon.
That's right. We are now on our own Treemium service.
That's right.
Called Treemium. Wow, okay, cool, great. Yeah. What if we had a Treemium service that we called Premium?
Wow.
You think that would freak people out?
That's a little too meta.
It is, isn't it? Yeah, all right, that's fair.
So yes, the way that people, including you, hopefully support the podcast now has changed a lot.
That's right.
We are moving away from Patreon. It has served us well, but we are... Our future is bright, Casey.
It is bright. We're now, we've condensed our offerings. So
that's
now
right.
You have these two options to join and support. That is the Tree Huggers level, which is $6, and that gets you extra bonus content. It gets you extra access to new live stuff that we do, early access to some cool stuff, and the best part, ad-free listens.
Huge.
You can listen to the whole thing, and the best other thing, the big reason, one of the big reasons that we switched to this new premium, Treemium service is that it is able to be put directly into your feed. So you
yes.
can go to Spotify and you can listen to it straight through. So you can essentially skip the line. You don't have to go to a different app. It's just all right there.
That's right. We're very excited. There's also, of course, we couldn't get rid of the Cone Club.
There's no way we could do that.
We've condensed the name. Even the Cone of the Month Club is now the Cone Club.
The Cone Club.
We also debated Club Cone, which is very cool.
Yeah, it's very German, I think. So, yeah. So.
Welcome to Club Cone.
It would have been like, oh my gosh, I love this place. Look at how they dance.
Everybody's drinking milk.
Yeah, wow. Milk. All of our German fans are like, no. Well, shut up, man.
Nuh-uh. That's where you get monthly cone stickers illustrated by different artists. We have a very exciting one coming up this month. So if you already support us on Patreon, we sent you an email through the email address that you signed up with.
Yes.
Sent you an email with all the information and a link to a migration tool.
That's right. That's important.
That's very important because if you already support us on Patreon, you use that migration tool. You're going to be grandfathered in at the tier you're at right now.
Exactly. So if you're paying $5 for the what is now the Tree Huggers tier, you can keep it for $5.
That's
indefinitely.
Right.
Definitely.
That's right.
Same thing for the Cone of the Month Club. It is now at $12. We had to adjust for inflation. All these fun things that everyone says when they raise their prices.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, if you are currently in the Cone of the Month Club, then you get grandfathered in at $10 as long as you remain in the club.
That's right.
So.
And to anybody who is thinking, man, I would really love to support this podcast. I've been listening for a little while. Or to anyone who's thinking, hey, you know what? I know my niece or my cousin really loves this show.
That tree friend that you
yes.
have that you're just like, man, I just want to get them a gift.
Even if they don't listen to the show, the Cone of the Month Club is kind of perfect.
True. If you have a friend who just likes stickers.
Yeah.
This is a great opportunity.
Absolutely.
Because you can gift them a subscription.
That's right, Casey. We now have gifted subscriptions. I just shifted into Steve Jobs mode. Announcing the first iPod. That's right. You can now gift subscriptions to our Tremium service, our Tremium platform, to your friends, family, coworkers, anybody who loves trees or completely arbitrary.
That's right.
And you can get annual subscriptions, Casey, which means you save 17% on a mm-hmm. monthly subscription. So
That's
you just
right.
pay once for the year and you're good. You just
good
enjoy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a big thing happening.
That's
over
a big
here,
thing
Casey.
Happened. Yeah. So jump on board and you'll be hearing about it.
Lest we forget, that's arbitrarypod.supercast.com. That's arbitrarypod, ArbitraryPod, .supercast.
That's right.
.com.
Go get it.
And Casey.
Huh?
There's more news.
What?
That's right. We're having a sale.
And more?
And more. We're having a merch sale right now.
That's right.
A December long merch sale.
The entire month of December, I believe it's 10% off.
Casey, I believe it's 20%
off. 20% off everything
now,
in the store.
I don't know if we can do this, but I'm getting the nod. Yeah, yep. We're going to go 20%.
We did it. Congratulations, Alex. We just redid all of our shirts, all of our stickers. So if you want something, go buy it.
Yep. And it's coupon code TREES. That's right. So go get yourself some arbitrary merch. Go get yourself a brand new Tremium subscription. Become a Tremium member today. Mm-hmm. ArbitraryPod.supercast.com. Get yourself some merch at arbitrarypod.com/merch. And stay tuned for Triazaki. We will be right back with Spirited Away here on Completely Arbitrary. You know, here I am at the ripe old age of 35. And one thing that has become really important to me just over the last couple of years is privacy. Besides what I tell you here on the podcast, I basically don't want anyone to know anything about me unless I choose to tell them. And one way I up my privacy game is with NordVPN. Now, if you are like me and didn't know what a VPN was until a couple of weeks ago, let me tell you, a VPN is a virtual private network. And I said to myself, well, sure, that sounds cool, but I really don't know what it is or does. And then the moment I turned it on, I said, I get it now. A VPN changes your IP address, hides your virtual location, and encrypts your connection, which allows you to increase your privacy online. How many times per day do you get scam calls or spam email because your data got leaked somehow? I also get emails from companies saying, hey, I see you bought something with us recently. Unfortunately, we got hacked and your data is now being used to harm you. With a VPN, you do not have to worry about any of this. It secures you when you're using public Wi-Fi. It stops marketers and internet service providers from tracking and collecting your browsing history and your messages and lots of other private data. And you can change your location to any of hundreds of countries, unlocking the power of, I don't know, say, British Netflix. I didn't know how important it was until I started using one. That's the truth. So if you just want to check out the features and see if it's right for you, I bet there's something about a VPN that will surprise you. So get started with NordVPN at nordvpn.com/trees. That's NORDVPN.com/trees. It's risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee, and the link is in the description. Now go get secure. Hey, let me ask you this. You ever taken a walk and just felt inspired? Maybe you discovered your new favorite restaurant, or popped into the library and found a book that you really wanted to read, or you're like, hey, I think this car dealership used to be a Taco Bell. Well, there's a podcast about this kind of thing now with comedian and actor Alan McLeod, one of the funniest guys. It's called Walking About. It's a new podcast that treks into the simple joy of walking and its connections to health, history, creativity, and of course, community. In each episode, Alan invites a friend to share a little stroll and see where the sidewalk takes him. Alan McLeod has guests including Mike Mitchell, Spoon Man, Spoon Nation for Life. You got Colton Dunn. You got Janet Varney, Eva Anderson, Whitmer Thomas, Gabrus, Ed Begley Jr., Catherine Spears, Andy Richter, and of course, Burger Boy, Nick Weiger. Some of the funniest people. You know this podcast is going to be an absolute hoot. Maybe you could even listen to it while you're taking your walks. So lace up your podcasting shoes and listen to Walking About out now, wherever you get your pods. Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary. Triazaki. Wow.
Are you excited? Everything feels very low right now, Alex. Very much like, hey.
Well.
Welcome.
Yeah. I guess I could pump up the energy a
little. Not in a negative way. I'm just okay, like, okay. I thought you were doing it on purpose. I thought you were bringing it down.
Like a lounge kind
exactly.
of vibe. Yeah.
Yeah. When we talk about Miyazaki, well, we're pretty much, we're in a karaoke bar, but sans karaoke.
Well, Casey, maybe.
Sans bar.
We're just standing in a room.
Just standing in a room, but it's very cool.
How about this, Casey? We're at a bathhouse.
Oh.
As is the setting of Spirited Away.
That's exactly what we're going to be doing.
Casey, today we are talking about the Sakaki.
Yes. I was waiting. I wasn't sure if you were going to say the scientific name or what it is, but yes, you got it right. Sakaki.
Cool. Thank you.
And I learned how to say this name. I looked it up on the internet, as I am wont to do, and it is Sakaki.
Yes.
And I love that. I had to remember that Japanese pronunciations are vastly different than pronunciations of Latin-based languages.
Yes.
So it's very hard for me to like not do Sakaki.
A good rule of thumb that I kind of go by, I know this isn't like proper, this isn't taught, I don't know, but like shift the emphasis one syllable back of where you would normally feel it would go.
Yeah. Right? Which still is confusing because I don't think I learned like what emphasis I put on what syllables before you brought it up sometime during this podcast.
Sure.
Not literally this one, but in Completely Arbitrary's universe. So yes, that is true. And I also learned that at the end, it's not Sakaki, it's like Sakaki. Like it's almost like the I disappears before it even gets there.
Wow. Hey, yeah. More Spirited Away parallels disappearing.
There you go. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Casey, well, let's imagine that you and I are on the grounds of a bathhouse for spirits.
All right.
And we come across some sakaki. Let's ID this tree.
Well, the first thing you'll notice is that it is not necessarily inside the bathhouse. Or necessarily inside the temple. It could be. There might be a little sprig. Mm. There might be a little bit in the very, very front or in the middle. But it is actually planted and grown around the outside. In fact, sakaki is probably more of a translation of border tree than necessarily sacred tree.
Interesting.
Yeah, there's a couple different etymological varieties of where it came from.
Huh.
But it's ultimately called that because it has been planted around spiritual places or gardens or things like that for thousands of years.
Is this like a protection thing?
You know, it kind of is. I've actually kind of read two different things where it's somewhat of a protection thing where it is not necessarily keeping things away, but it just shows that this is a highly spiritual place. You
kind
know?
Of a mark of like, okay, this is a new area.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. So it's not keeping anything out, like because it also is used, like if there's a little sprig in it, it. It's actually used by priests to bring spirits in and welcome them and say, hey, come on into this space.
Wow.
So it's almost a plant that is used as a as kind of a going and coming and a welcoming kind of thing.
Like, I love that.
Yeah, it's used as a... as a bidder, it bids you adieu.
Ah.
Adieu. Bids you hello. Adieu is goodbye, isn't it? Wow.
And French.
Well, shit.
I have to say, Casey, I'm seeing, I don't want to poke this episode full of parallels.
Mm.
So another parallel here,
okay.
Or my first of many probably, mm-hmm. with kind of entering a new space. This space is for, this space is spiritual.
Yeah.
Right? I think of Torrey Gates. Do you know Torrey Gate?
I'm not sure that I do.
Imagine this, two poles going up,
yeah.
With a sort of curved beam connecting them on top.
Yes, I do know these.
This is a Torrey Gate, and it is meant to symbolize, to denote, this is a place of spiritual things.
Yeah, I see. Okay.
So you'll see them at the front of temples. And.
Yeah, I have. In fact, I believe that's exactly what I'm imagining right now.
And you'll see them in the first scene of Spirited Away, when they're driving their car into the on the back country road,
yeah.
They pass a big tree, which I want you to ID that tree, by the way.
Cool.
And kind of leaned up against it as a decommissioned Torrey Gate.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, this is definitely going to happen throughout, because I did research on the show, the movie itself, and actually like tried to find where all these parallels were, because
yeah.
I do not understand or am familiar with Shinto the way that anyone else who's actually in Japan or has these beliefs or has even done a significant amount of study. I study the trees.
You know?
And then I also look at all these other things that have to do with it. So first off, I can't say that I am a Shinto expert here.
Well,
I'm pretty sure I pronounce every single one of the words incorrectly.
That's strange to me, because on your business card, it says... dendrologist and Shinto expert.
Where did you get that business card, Alex? I got rid of those years ago. Well, that is, so it's, I was trying to learn all of these different spiritual kind of things that were in the movie that I didn't understand.
Totally.
And so it was actually kind of fun to do that. And this is one of the things, but I didn't see, interestingly, too much of this tree in the movie. And I was watching.
Wow.
I was trying to look for it. But I think it's a little bit different in that the movie is playing a different role than the plant does. So the plant is not the plant in instance or in kind of the larger scheme, it would be at the very entrance of the bathhouse,
mm-hmm.
potentially. But it's already in the spiritual realm. So like you're just spirits are going to the bathhouse.
Yeah.
They're not necessarily like, coming from a non-spiritual realm or in a different spiritual realm to this realm. Does that make sense?
They're not like materializing in the bathhouse.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. So I was looking for it. I didn't see it. So I was like, all right, well, I can't see this tree, so I'm going to have to identify it myself.
Wow.
It's very frustrating.
Casey just gave a great, like, ugh.
Ugh, God.
These guys.
Google. Tell me about the Claria japonica.
Claria japonica. That's what we're working with.
That is exactly what we're working with. Claria japonica. So this is a plant that used to be in the tea family. It's very closely related to it. And now it is in the Pentaphyllaceae, or now it's in the Pentaphyllaceae.
Pentaphyllaceae.
I think that's how it's
pronounced. Wow, I see it here. Oh
yeah,
my gosh.
Yeah, it's very challenging to say.
What does that mean? Five leaves?
I would say, I believe it means five petals.
Petals,
yes.
Okay.
Which I believe a lot of other plants have five petals. In fact, very many to most of the flowering plants that are not monocots have petals in multiples of five.
Okay.
But ultimately, that's what it means. And in fact, the Claria is named after a German botanist named Andreas Klayer. Now, this is all I know about this guy.
I do want to specify it's Clayera.
Clayera, yes. Oh, wait. Yes, that's what I said, yeah.
You said Claria.
Oh, Clayera, I see. See, look, I'm already getting it wrong.
Oh, Casey, I don't want to do this the whole time.
Yeah, Alex, you're just going to constantly come in and be like, Casey, it's a sakaki.
Sakaki.
God dang it, Alex. yes, okay. Thank you, Alex. I appreciate that. But this guy, Andreas Klayer, or Klura, How would you pronounce his last name? Can you see it? It's spelled C-L-E-Y-E-R.
Claire.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You all said, right, you all got right. It, yeah, 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 yeah. Thanks, everyone. Thanks. That's all I know about the guy. Like, I gave him a Google, wow. And it just came up with, like, modern-day obituaries, as it does. But he's from the 1600s. He's a botanist. And that's where it ends. He don't even have a Wikipedia page, Alex.
See, sounds like your classic spirit.
It does. Yeah, yeah. Classic spirit. So he is the German physician spirit of this plant.
Uh-huh.
But actually, the name of the plant is far more interesting because Sakaki means literally sacred tree or divine tree.
Wow.
Also, like I said, could mean border tree. And it is, interestingly, the characters are, so Japanese, the written language,
yeah,
is from, initially, it's kind of taken from Chinese.
Right.
So a lot of the characters that are in Japanese are of Chinese origin.
Okay.
However, there are some that have been made and created strictly for and by the Japanese.
That's cool.
So this is one of those word. And so this is, so if it's just the characters, it's called kanji. And now if it is made by Japanese people for Japanese people, then it is called a wasi kanji. And those are specific to certain things of and for Japan.
Interesting.
Now, this is interesting also because, Alex, that means that when you read it, that denotes that the thing that it is referring to, actually, I should say connotes that the thing that it is referring to is both literally the thing it's naming, but also it gives you this kind of metadata that it is of Japan because the word itself is a Japanese word of Japanese origin.
Cool.
So yeah, it's really kind of fun.
That's really interesting.
Way more interesting than Andres Clara, a Dutch physician that no one knows anything about anymore.
Oh, sorry, Andres.
Yeah, anyway. But the tree itself, Alex, I know that's really what we want to hear about.
Sure.
I have to say, before we get any further, that we are talking about this as a tree in its native habitat, where it grows as a small evergreen shrub tree thing to about 30 feet.
Okay.
If you plant it outside of that, it doesn't get to tree height.
Oh, yeah.
So just looking around, you see one at the some garden outside of Japan or Taiwan, yeah, or mainland China, don't look at it.
I do notice a lot of these images are of what appear to be, and I'll just say it, a bush.
It's a bush. It's a tiny,
it's not even a shrub, it's a bush.
Like, it's just, it is a small thing. And yeah, I think that the reason it is, it looks like that often, is that it's pruned and, like, consistently clipped because they use sprigs of it in all sorts of different spiritual things.
Uh-huh.
So I think that it's actually kept low, not necessarily on purpose, but purposefully trimmed.
Interesting case.
But I cannot confirm nor deny that.
I mean, images of it also look like it's sort of ripe for topiary.
Yeah.
Art,
which is, you know, if there's anything that the Japanese are good at, it's making things into useful forms.
Yeah.
And they'd say, well, if we're going to be cutting this, then let's keep it really low so whenever it grows up, we can just cut it at the height of where we cut things, as opposed to figuring out, like, wow, I have to climb this tree, we're gonna have to do this. Like, it's very intentional means of pruning, right?
Wow. Yeah.
So that is very likely why in many places, it's seen as a shrub, but if you are in the natural forest, in fact, the evergreen forests of oak trees, which I thought was so fascinating.
Oh.
There are many different native oak trees in, like, evergreen species of plant,
uh-huh,
that grow in southern Japan.
How about that?
And it tends to actually create this kind of evergreen tall forest with also a couple species of pines. But then underneath are these little, like, these little trees that look like kind of second story is what everyone's kind of referring to it as.
Oh.
It's kind of like the understory of evergreen plants in an otherwise larger overstory of evergreen oak species.
It sounds beautiful.
Yeah, it really does. And that's where our little tree grows, up to 30 feet in this native habitat.
Okay.
So it grows up and it is, like I said, small, shrubby kind of tree. It has alternately arranged leaves that are really robustly, like, glossy, evergreen, leathery things.
These are, yeah, you can tell that these are, like, they put an extra coat on for the winter.
Yeah, that's a great description.
Like, they are really thick, leathery, glossy. You can tell right away that they're evergreen.
Yeah,
because, like, it's like, oh, broadleaf, like, deciduous trees don't need to be that tough.
They don't care. they just let it go, and they're like, I'm just, when fall comes, I'm going to lose you anyway.
Yeah.
So, like, Let's just wait for September to end.
They so wow, Billy Joel.
God.
I always want to say Joel. Yeah, they look a little bit like miniature magnolia leaves, Casey.
Yes, they really do. Yeah, totally true. And so they grow there. They are evergreen and are underneath. They look very similar to camellias. So if you flip them, they have a similar thing as camellias, which is kind of like a lighter green, almost yellowish green on the bottom.
Yeah, I see that.
So these are maybe about 3 to 4 inches long. And they, when they emerge in the early spring, they are a like dark coppery red color. And this is probably, it's actually something that a lot of plants do. They emerge red, and that is because they have anthocyanins in their it's a pigment in their foliage.
God bless you.
Yes, thank you. Excuse me. So the I need another tissue, Alex. Anthocyanins, they create the red colors that you see in the fall and that kind of thing.
Okay.
As well. And they, that's
okay, really quickly, please. I'm a little bit shocked here because I always think that that red color when they first sprout is just an absence of chlorophyll, like they haven't built up their chlorophyll yet.
Yes.
Is that, but now I'm learning that it's a whole new thing that specifically makes that color, not the absence of chlorophyll.
Well, you can think about it a little bit of both. Okay. Where same thing in the fall, when leaves take the chlorophyll away and they start deconstructing it, there are other pigments in the leaves that are left over, and that's the ones that you see.
Okay.
But it is also very likely that they're also producing these to kind of take the place of the chlorophyll.
I got you.
So in this case, they are there first as the leaves start coming out. They have these other redder pigments in them. Those red pigments essentially do the same thing as melanin does in our skin, where it kind of protects us from really harsh rays of the sun.
Yeah.
So it does the same thing for plants. It protects them. They're nice little fresh growth that hasn't put on all of its extra tough layers and things.
Interesting.
So it's a little bit of likely both, where there isn't enough chlorophyll, but there's also just these very tender leaves coming out. So they put certain colors to be a little bit protective. Once they get their nice epidermis and everything in order, then they fill it with the green protective stuff.
Gotcha. Cool.
So it comes out and it looks very beautiful. I'm sure there's probably most photos that anyone has ever seen of this is probably showing it kind of mid coppery greenish moment.
Yeah.
It looks a lot like photinia actually, which is a very common shrub you get, especially out here in the West.
Interesting.
So after the leaves first emerge, their new foliage comes out, because remember, they're evergreen, so they'll always have their older foliage on. They put out these adorable little flowers. I just love these flowers.
They're
Alex.
Great.
They look to me like they look like there's a certain kind of shoe, and I don't know why this reminds me of it, but it's like a woman's shoe that is almost like a lacy flat slipper, but not slipper, you know.
Like, almost like a ballet shoe?
Not quite a ballet shoe. Just like, I'm going to go out. It's a nice day. We're going to go to brunch. And I'm going to put on a dress. I'm going to look nice. Uh-huh. It's not a high heel. It's not a fancy shoe. But it's more than your standard Vans or something.
Okay,
you know? Like it's kind of like a step up in elegance with like a nice little curved toe. Like, it's a very specific kind of shoe.
Okay. Does it have a buckle on top, Casey? Or a strap?
Not really, no. You just slide your foot in.
Okay, it's closed toed?
Yeah, closed toed.
Okay. Okay. Oh, it's going to bother me.
I'm sorry.
I don't know what it is.
I think it's just a style of footwear. Like, there's no brand or anything like that. Like, I have just noticed throughout my life that, like, I am not a shoe person, but for whatever reason, whenever I've seen those shoes, I'm like, those are the cutest goddamn shoes I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And I think it's just that they are like normally this creamy white color and they have this like rounded toe, and they are just like this flower.
Wow.
I don't know why, but I think they have like these adorable little curved petals and their stamens on the inside with the little pollen on it just have a little bit of like orange brown color to them. So they look almost like they're kind of dotted, but you have to look closer and you realize, oh, they're not dotted. They're perfectly pale.
Totally.
I don't know. They just look just like it. If I could even imagine and say, oh, it looks like these little slip-on flats, then I would pull up a picture and I'd show you, and you'd be like, oh my God, they are the footwear manifestation of the Sakaki tree.
Well, if we're ever out together and you see a woman wearing these shoes, we'd go, there they are. There are the shoes.
Get them.
The Sakaki flower shoes.
Yeah, exactly. Then watch her immediately run away and be like, who are these guys?
Sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
I will say, at first glance, I look at these flowers and I'm like, utility flower.
Ugh.
And then I spend some time with them.
Yeah, there you go.
And I'm like, No. These are not utility flowers. These are gorgeous, delicate, little graceful flowers.
Yes, exactly. They're very delicate and graceful. I think that's a perfect way to describe it.
Mm-hmm.
They are perfect flowers. So they have both male and female parts them. They are also very fragrant, and they come out in the axils of the leaf.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you have not known what an axil is of a leaf, let me first say, there's going to be a great book coming out in 2025. I'm going to explain everything about
it. Wow.
There's also lots of different definitions you can find on the internet, but just hold on until the book comes out and read that. It's the space, the angle between the branch and the actual stem, the petiole of the leaf. So it's not necessarily, it's just that space, the axle. It's almost like your armpit, but it's not the literal pit. It's the space between your arm and your torso.
I got
it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's where they come out. They just pop out between the two.
Interesting.
Yeah. They're usually singular, solitary flowers, but sometimes they come out in little bundles of maybe 2 to 5. And then they mature into a red berry that then matures into a black berry.
Can you eat these?
I don't think you can. I've not seen anything that says you can. And usually something says that. Like, they're sweet and juicy.
Yeah, I got a little whoop. I got a little, my radar started going off when you said a little red berry. Because in Spirited Away, Haku feeds Chihiro, the girl from the human world, a little red berry. He says, eat this so you don't fucking disappear.
Yes, you don't disappear.
Yeah. And she eats it, and she becomes opaque.
Yeah, and she becomes opaque again.
I thought maybe that was a Sakaki flower.
I don't. I have not found anything that says that it is.
Probably something else.
Yes, I'm. Yeah, I'm very curious because I haven't also. I have not heard that in any of this. This whole kind of discussion that they are the fruit themselves are used. It's really the leaves that everyone focuses on.
Okay.
Now, before we get to that, though, we have to finally talk about the bark. And that's it. The bark is so lame. I was really hoping it was going to be interesting, and it's just got so little to it.
Casey, I'm going to give it a pass. I'll tell you why.
Why? What?
I think utility bark is completely acceptable here because there is already so much happening with this tree.
What?
If it had incredible bark, I'd be like, yeah, you're kind of like, it's a hat on a hat. Like, focus on the spiritual practice aspect of it, right?
I don't know about this.
This is one man's opinion, but I think that I can give it a pass on its boring as shit, ugly bark because it's so important to this whole other, it's like not even the point, you know?
I guess that's fine, but you know what? Any good designer would take a look at everything, and I'm not in any way claiming that someone designed this tree. However, I don't think you should get a pass. I think we need to make sure to know, like, hey, great, 10 out of 10, 10 out of 10, 3 out of 10.
Yeah, all right, that's fair. Go ahead and drag it.
That's fine. I will drag it. You uplift it, and then at the end of the day, it will just be completely neutral.
A perfect 5 cones.
The same kind of cone that the bark is. Okay.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's how you recognize it.
Okay.
It's a beautiful plant. You can find it often while you're walking into or around a shrine. That's where it would be planted, or a temple.
Okay.
But also like outside people's gardens and that kind of thing. But it also just is a very commonly grown plant. You can actually find it over in the United States, but it likes to be in the little warmer areas. So you're not probably going to find it up too high, because it can only go to, I think, a USDA Zone 8, which is just recently moved just a little bit further up than where it used to be.
Wow. Oh, that's loaded.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, it is. Oh, yeah.
Jesus. Well, that's our tree.
That is our tree. And now, of course, everyone's next question is, what the hell does this tree have to do with anything we're talking about?
Yeah, Case. Well, let me ask you, what the hell does this tree have to do with anything we're talking about?
You said it just like me, Alex. That was really good. Well, it turns out, as you are aware, that this tree is like known as, like, whenever you Google it, do anything with it, it's literally described as the sacred tree
yes.
of Japan.
There's way more material on a Google search about its role in Shinto than there is about the tree itself.
Yes, which is very curious to me because the tree itself, like, it has not been made clear to me exactly why this tree was chosen or found itself in this.
Wow.
Aside from one specific story.
Oh my God.
But there might be an apple / quince issue happening here.
What Casey's referring to, of course, is that apple has kind of stolen valor.
Yes.
That should belong to the quince, or that does belong to the quince.
Exactly.
With, like, mistranslations and
everything is just been bastardized by the apple.
Yeah.
It was all just of one big fraud.
Wow.
However, I'm not claiming that with this.
Okay.
It's actually more of a linguistics issue where the term apparently used to just apply to any evergreen broadleaf tree. So
what term?
The term, like, a sakaki, like that name.
Sakaki.
Excuse me.
Sorry.
Sakaki.
Mm-hmm.
It was generally kind of like corn used to be, where before corn, zia maize, the plant that we eat and call corn, before that was discovered, the term corn in English just referred to a grain of any sort. So corn was any grain, and now it only refers to the one grain that we call corn.
Sure.
This is also potentially what happened with this, where you had sakaki that was generally an evergreen plant, but then over time, that evergreen plant was known to be Cluria japonica.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, are you familiar with this story?
No, not even at all.
Oh my God. It's such an interesting story.
Listen, unless it's about a 10-year-old girl whose parents turn into pigs and starts working at a bathhouse, I don't know it.
All right. Well, we're going to expand your horizons real fast, Alex.
That's the only story I've ever heard.
This is the story of why this tree became so important in Shinto to begin with.
Let's hear it.
So it initially started because there was a, it's kind of the creation myth of Japan itself, where apparently there was a god that existed only because a shoot came up from the water, from the ocean, and went so high it became, essentially went up to the heavens and then became a god. It became a god, and then that god ended up creating Japan. Wow. Then it had two daughters, two next gods came from it.
Mm-hmm.
And not two daughters, just two more gods, let me say.
When you said a shoot, is this a shoot of a plant?
Yes, of a plant of some kind. Yeah, yeah. Okay. This is like the OG, very beginning. This is, you know, the turtles all the way down kind of thing.
It all began with a shoot of a plant.
Yeah, exactly.
A new root, new shoot.
So this this god was, like, curious what was underneath the water. So took a staff, put it in the water, and pulled it up, and mud fell off of it. Mm. When the mud hardened, it became the islands of Japan.
Wow.
So then these two other gods that were kind of created ended up going down into or onto this island, just kind of explored, and were looking around, seeing what's there. And they're like, yeah, this place is pretty sweet. I think we're going to stay. So then they had three children. They're called the precious, or the three precious children.
Oh.
Those children were two girls and one boy. One of the girls became the sun goddess Amaterasu.
Mm.
And she had a sister named Tsukuyomi.
Mm.
And then there was their brother, the mischievous jerk Susanoo. I believe it's Susanoo.
Okay. And what was he the god of?
The sea.
Ah.
Yes. So naturally, he was rambunctious and he was raging and caused storms.
I feel like many sea or ocean or water gods are sort of just like the problem child, Poseidon.
Yeah. Which makes sense, yeah, because the ocean is so, like, rough and causes so much trouble.
Mm-hmm.
You know, giant waves, and it crashes and it brings in the storms. Like, it's always causing some amount of chaos,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas land, the sun and the moon, they're up in the heavens. They just kind of move. They come and they go.
Right. Wow. That's interesting, Casey.
Yeah. So one time, her brother just essentially had a tantrum. And Susanoo ended up causing, he did three things that just really pissed off Amaterasu.
Okay.
And those were, first, he ruined her rice fields. Mm. So all the rice paddies. Then he took a shit in her house, in her palace.
Is this so, real, Casey?
This is real.
Is this your fan fiction now? This is,
and then...
he drank all of her beers.
And then she got so pissed. No, this is literally it. Everyone says, "Oh, he defecated is wow. the term, or he dishonored or disgraced, like something like that." So the imagery is extremely clear.
I love gods.
One person literally says, "Yeah, he just defecated in her palace."
Wow.
So that was the second offense.
Okay.
And the third was that he flayed a horse live. Threw it into the like her weaver's studio. And then, according to something that I read, and again, translations can be fun, one of the weavers ended up like jamming her genitals against the weaving shuttle and died.
Oh my God.
So, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on with this first myth of how essentially the sun god, Amaterasu, ended up isolating herself in a cave because her brother, Susanoo, was just a complete jerk on his tantrum before he left to go into the sea and be there forever.
Can I just say, wouldn't you love to be a fly on the wall at that family reunion?
Yes. Oh, that would be a goddamn delight. I feel like you could be a fly on the wall, but they'd know you're there, you know? They are gods.
Of course,
all,
so, yeah. Oh.
So... ended up being that she went to this cave and she rolled this boulder in front of her and she said, "I'm never coming out." So darkness fell across land because she's the sun goddess. So the wow. sun deity, the sun kami, K-A-M-I.
That's right. We'll talk about kamis.
Yes. So she was in there and all the other gods, like some 800 other gods and kami, all these different deities got together and they're like, "What the hell are we going to do?" Mm. Like, she's in there. She's pissed. Like, it's so dark out here. Everything sucks. We need to figure out what to do. So they got everybody together. And like I said, there's like 800 kami are like mentioned in this ancient story.
Wow.
And this was written down in the 700s initially. It's Japan's very first book. Oh. Yeah, let me see. It's called the Kojiki.
Kojiki.
The Record of Ancient Matters.
Wow.
I love that.
That's great.
So anyway, they this is like the very beginning of Shinto also, I should note. Like, this is kind of the big creation myth within this kind of spiritual ideology.
Sure.
So they all these gods got together and they have a lot of Greek god parallels here where there's like gods and goddesses and deities, kami, all about these different things. Mm. And this is kind of the big thing with Shinto where everything has a spirit, literally anything and the idea of something. So like the wind has its own kami, rivers, trees, individual trees, rocks, people, ideas, you know, like
emotions.
Yes, exactly.
Anger, sadness.
Yeah, everything has a spirit or is represented by a spirit.
Joy, of course, is voiced by Amy Poehler.
So the way that they, all these gods got together,
yeah,
saved the sun goddess.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They got this huge crew together and they were like, "All right, everyone, we got to get her out. I have an idea." The god of, the deity of wisdom came over and said, "Okay, so here's what we're going to do. I need someone to go pull up that sakaki tree from this ancient mountainside." And it was a sakaki with 500 limbs.
Wow.
They pulled it up by the roots and they brought it over. And then at different sections, the top, middle, and the bottom, they started to put things in it. At the top, they put some banners. The bottom, they put some beads. In the middle, they put a big mirror. Hmm. And each one of them moved it over and they had another one that was like really strong. Someone else had this magic rope and they ended up getting all of the, I believe it is young roosters, like cockerels is what they call them.
Hmm.
And they're like just not adult roosters. They're like young juvenile roosters.
Okay.
Apparently they're very annoying and loud. So they got all of them in this area, in this southern, I believe it's kind of the southern section, to be very loud. And they just made all the birds go caw all at once. Then another one of the kami started this dance and it was a provocative dance.
Oh.
Everyone else was like yelled and laughed and have a good time. So they all laughed all at once, very loudly. And this piqued the interest of the sun goddess. So she was like, what the hell could they be doing out there when I'm in here? There's not even any sunlight out there. How could they be having any amount of fun at all? So she rolled the rock over and was like, the hell are you guys doing? And then they responded and said, well, actually, we found another goddess out here who's like way cooler than you. And she was like, wait, what? No. And then so she peeked out further to see who this other like greater goddess was. And then they showed her the mirror and two things. One, they said, it's actually you. So she just saw her own reflection. Uh-huh. And B, that reflection opened a reflected sun out into the rest of the world and they brought it back.
Wow.
Isn't that a great myth?
That is so great and so convoluted. All these myths are so like they could have cut out so many steps. Yeah. I understand that they're metaphorical, they're analogous.
And they brought a pen of three different inks. What? Yeah, there are these a lot of little things that I'm sure are A, lost in translation.
Sure.
But B, are surely like have reasons for it, you know, yeah. As you go back. Like there's even like little bits and parts about this plant and like certain colors. Like everything is very symbolic and, yeah. And it has a lot of imagery to it.
So I wonder once the mirror caught the reflection of the sun.
Yeah.
Did the sun goddess come back out, or did they just like, you know, what happened from there?
Yeah, you remember that magic rope that one of the kami brought?
Yeah.
Pulled it across the cave entrance, so she couldn't go back in.
Of course.
Can't cross that magic rope.
Nope. It's magical. That's why they made it that way.
That is in the design.
How fascinating, Casey. Yeah.
And then ever since, this tree, the Sakaki, has been explicitly seen as a welcoming thing. This is, again, it kind of calls back to it when you have it in a modern temple or shrine. It is something that calls and basically says, hey, spirits, come here. So it's a welcoming kind of thing. So that is where it initially came from, because it coaxed out the sun goddess. It was the big 500-branched tree that they used to get her out.
Wow.
So that is why it's kind of kept through this metaphor and why it initially has been so, so specifically called out as an important sacred tree. It's basically because it is what brought the sun back, and then all of the other spirits in the spirit world kind of have been allowed to be around or are still around because the sun came back out. So this is how everything really got going in the whole idea of Shinto.
Wow. I would love to read more about Shinto. That is so fascinating.
Yeah. It's a very, very like rich history. Everything has got something.
Yeah. So Casey, I'm looping back here to something you said earlier, then we'll go on our break. You mentioned that Sakaki could be like a apple quince thing. Maybe there's like a mistranslation. Like, we don't know for sure that it was this species of tree.
Yes.
That originally was in the book of ancient matters, right?
Potentially, yes.
Potentially.
Yes.
And that, you know, we now know it to be this important tree to Shinto.
Yeah.
But it's possible there's a prodigal son out there in the forest who's like, it should be me.
Yeah, theoretically. Hmm. And I don't know, and I don't want anyone who does, you know, have a way deeper understanding of this to come be like, well, actually, because it does come down to us, as myths always do. If we say it is, then it is.
Yeah.
You know? So it's you just have to believe ancient myths, ancient stories, ancient history, because at one point you just don't know. And if everyone says it, then we'd be like, okay, yeah, that was it.
You totally. Know?
And the thing why I think it's reasonable for us to do that is that famously the Japanese are very good at horticulture. Mm. They have been doing horticulture things with different plants for thousands of years. So it would be, I think, a little disingenuous of us to say, well, they couldn't tell the difference between this evergreen or that evergreen. There are, like, peoples of this era and prior had such a closer relationship with the plants. And this is everywhere in the world. So I think it's a little hubristic of humans to kind of even bring that up. I bring it up because, I read it. I think it's important to say, well, we don't know. This was the old translation. It could be something different. But
you're not challenging it. You're not taking it on as your personal opinion.
I shall not die on that hill.
No.
But it's a, I think it is a fascinating, if you consider it, and this is something I think people are good to do in the larger kind of history, is to think of the context, you know? Mm. Like, if we're just going to look at these people and say, well, they didn't know as much about plants as we do now, so we can question them. It's like, well, maybe that's accurate, but it's also accurate that they were way closer to plants and used them way more specifically. Maybe they didn't specifically know the differences of the, you know, well, these leaves and flowers are just right. a little bit different, so we know they're separate.
You have to ask yourself, like, does that matter?
Yeah.
Does maybe that knowledge matter?
They just looked at the differences and just say, yeah, yeah, there's A and there's B.
Like, right. But then... And then later we name all these things and we go deep into the genetics.
Yes.
And then we say, now we know about these trees.
Right. They might have just said, yeah, that like tree A, B, and C are all the same because they all look the same for general purposes.
Yeah.
You know, this is the folk taxonomy again that we've talked about 100 times.
Yeah.
So they could have had a folk taxonomy that included multiple evergreen species that they all called Sakaki. Mm-hmm. But then as they learned, they said, well, okay, well, this one's actually a different species for this reason or that reason. And even camellia, that's named after a person. That's a last name of a guy. So I don't even know off the top of my head what the Japanese term is for that. Maybe they use the same one. Maybe they all just called him Sakaki. I don't know.
Yeah, interesting case.
So, there you go.
Well, Casey, that was fascinating. I cannot wait to give a review to this tree.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've got some tricks up my sleeve.
Oh,
here.
I want to hear your tricks. And then we're going to talk about how Shinto works with the movie Spirited Away.
That's right. What a great series we've built here. Hey, you know what? We're going to do all that, but we got to do it after a break. We will be right back with Completely Arbitrary's Triazaki.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first 3 orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary's Triazaki. That was our discussion of the Sakaki and its place in the origins of Shinto.
That's right.
Wow, Casey. It is time for a review of this tree. Here's how it works. We're going to give some final thoughts on the Sakaki and then give it a rating of 0 to 10. Hokora. Now, Casey.
Yes?
Hokora are little roadside stone houses meant to provide a home for kami in the forest.
Okay, yeah.
Hokora.
Is in the very beginning of the film.
Yes.
Doesn't our hero Shakira?
Shakira?
Shakira.
Chihiro.
Shihiro.
Yeah.
Yeah. Our hero Shakira.
She gets to the bathhouse. She starts twerking for all the spirits.
Hey, you know what? If they're into it, they're all getting gold. That's what.
See that no face just throwing gold at her.
Yes. Yes. She finds like a bunch of little houses, and she literally makes a comment. Those look like little houses.
Yes.
They're all just like strewn and broken old things.
Yeah. It almost looks like somebody just dumped them on the side of the road, but I don't think that is true. I think that those were put there for the kami.
Yes. Now, what are they called again?
These are hokora. It's like little stone birdhouses.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So we're going to give this tree a rating. out of 10 Hokura.
Oh,
how
honor.
Many kami?
Golden
Hokura of honor.
Okay.
How many kami would you invite to live among this tree?
Oh, would you invite 1 to 10?
Yes. Casey, we'll begin with you.
Okay, let's see if I can remember all these words. How many kami can fit in? So is it golden kami of honor or is it golden
Hokura?
Okay. Hokura of honor.
Yeah.
Hokura. Okay. Like Yukura.
Hokura.
All right. So we have an adorable little tree here. I have to say, I'm kind of perplexed about it because if I am thinking of this in the good old-fashioned Casey way, which is, how is this useful and enjoyable in a lovely plant?
As a tree. Yeah.
As a tree, I have to say, this is on that spectrum of like pomegranate and the curry leaf tree and even like, I don't know, we haven't actually done a witch hazel yet, but it's on that level.
Yeah.
I still want to do witch hazel. So it's in that realm of little tiny trees that we have to like really be like, yeah, that's a tree. If you have anything to say, don't.
It's culturally insensitive to suggest that this is not a tree.
Thank you. So I believe that if I was just to say, you know, you should plant this, I think I would say, yes, you should.
Mm-hmm.
I have not heard that it's invasive. It looks beautiful. The foliage is like a really stunning, like dark, shiny color. I like the flowers the most.
Oh, yeah.
An adorable, fragrant flower that also like just falls down. They hang pendulously, so you can't just like walk over and be like, look at that flower. It's not in your face. It's a flower that you have to go find.
Like a pair of woman's shoes on a power line.
Just hanging on out there. Like, wow, look how beautiful it is. I think that this tree is probably, I'm going to give it a 6.5 out of 10.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
It's wonderful. I wish the bark was better. I truly do. That would put it up a little bit for me. It's interesting in that it is the tree that brought the sun, that like they hung stuff on to bring the sun out. Also, because it's evergreen, it has this idea of everlasting life and like permanence and things like that.
Amazing.
So it has all these mythic things to it, but it's very much like on a different level than other plants. Where like certain plants, they like the pomegranate, for instance, it's heavily full of mythos because of like how it grows and how it's been used, right?
Yeah.
Whereas this, it's the plant that just has the gods kind of, it entices the gods to come into a space. But like, that's it. Like, I don't know. It's on a different level. it's hard for me to describe.
Okay. That's
Does that
fine.
Make sense? You know?
I think so.
There's not like a particular aspect of the tree that everyone's like, oh, that aspect makes it that specific thing.
Yeah.
You know, like the pomegranate fruit, it is like the certain colors and the certain shape and everything. And it makes this feel very like fertility goddess kind of thing. So it has this like this metaphor of use. Whereas in the case of the sakaki, it's the tree itself. Like, it's like, no, there's nothing about me that is used to bring back the kind of gods, the goddesses. It is just me.
You're saying sort of that the sakaki won the mythological lottery.
Yeah, I think so. Where everything else is, there's a purpose to it that it provides. In this case, it's just the existence of this tree.
Okay.
Period.
Fair enough.
So I think that is doing a lot of heavy lifting for it, because everything else except the flowers, I'm kind of like, meh.
Yeah.
Meh, whatever.
I basically agree with you there. 6.5?
6.5 is what I give it. I'm sorry. Not everything is perfect.
6.5 Hokura.
Of honor. Golden Hokura of honor.
All right. Well, the sakaki. The leaves.
Yes.
Meh.
Ooh.
The bark. Meh. The overall morphology. Meh. The flowers. I like them well enough, but they don't blow me away.
Wow.
The mythos. The cultural significance. The practical significance in terms of the indigenous religion, right? Uh-huh. It's used for ceremony and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's the opposite of the man.
Off the charts.
I think I kind of have to ignore how this tree looks to give my score because it is not a stunner.
Yeah.
It is not superfluous by any means. It is not attractive.
Wait, hold on. Isn't superfluous, you mean
biggest? Superlative.
Superlative, Alex. Alex. I do not like superfluous trees. You got that wrong. I like superlative trees.
Thank you.
That, wow. For those of you who want a little bit of peek in the background, took us 10 minutes to remember the word that we're actually trying to look up.
But I, for you, it took a mere moment because of my editing skills.
Yes. Incredible. Yes, I like superfluous trees only so that I can just walk right over them.
Sure. Oh my God. Was it worth it? So yes. Nothing about this tree is superlative.
Yes.
Except for its meaning to people.
True.
And as you know, I love a tree that gives back. This means food.
Mm-hmm.
This means cultural significance.
Mm-hmm.
Ceremonial significance.
Mm-hmm.
And this tree, oh boy, has it got it. I mean, like, this might be like top 10 important trees to this sort of thing in the world, right?
Yeah, I think so. And it's always hard to like make those analogies, those comparisons. But yes, I mean, this is the sacred tree of Japan.
It's not a contest, but there is no denying that this tree is like, wow. It's in the fucking creation myth, man.
Exactly.
Casey, okay. I would be silly to not give this tree a 9.0 out of 10.
Wow. Certainly, we approached it from different places.
And that's the beauty of completely arbitrary.
Isn't that the beauty of it? Wow.
You're completely, and I am arbitrary.
Yeah. Excellent.
That was our review of the Sakaki. We hope you enjoyed it. Casey.
Yes, sir.
I don't have a clever name for this. Maybe we will next week. But it is time for our segment where you and I discuss the movie that this episode is based on.
I think that sounds great.
This is Ghibli Chat. This week, of course, we watched and based this episode off of Spirited Away.
Yes.
Which is a film by Hayao Miyazaki. That's the whole fucking point. Casey, this was your first Studio Ghibli movie.
It was.
This movie came out in 2001.
It did.
It runs for 2 hours and 5 minutes.
That's correct.
And let me tell you, does it fly by? Well, the first time I watched it, it did not fly by. It crawled by. Because, as I told you, Casey, these movies, I will say, feel very different than Western media, which is very strict and structured on a three-act structure.
Yeah.
I believe that these movies also have a three-act structure, but it's a little less blunt and a little more nuanced. And so the first times I watched it, I was like, I don't know where the fuck we are in this story.
Yeah, but you pay attention to those things like pacing and timing and where are we?
I do.
I was just watching it being like, okay.
And then this happened. Okay.
It's the same thing with Killers of the Flower Moon.
Oh.
Same thing where I was just like watching it. And now it's done. I was like, okay. It's like a Coen Brothers movie. God. There is no beginning, middle, or end. It just starts, then it's in the middle, and then it is done.
Eventually it stops.
Yeah.
See? Oh, well, I wish I could watch movies like that. It's torture. At its surface level, Spirited Away is about a young girl, 10-year-old girl named Chihiro. Her family is moving to a home in the country. She's leaving her old school and her old friends behind.
Mm-hmm.
They get a little lost
on
the way to their new home.
A little bit hubris on the dance part.
That's right. And they end up sort of in this, what appears to be almost like a boardwalk. It reminds me a little bit of like, what's it called? Like the Atlantic City Boardwalk?
Yeah, right. It's called an amusement park.
Yes.
Which they make a reference to as being something that is, it was developed heavily in the mid early 80s in Japan.
Oh, wow.
And then in the late 80s, there's a huge economic crash, and like I think into the 90s.
Wow.
And so then a bunch of these places just closed and just became kind of these ghost towns.
That is really interesting. And hey,
they make a reference. Yeah.
So they come across, her and her parents come across this, this restaurant that appears to have like huge bowls of food set out ready to go.
Just ready.
Yeah. And the parents start eating.
They can't even contain themselves.
No, it is very, it's almost creepy. They're like, they're a little obsessed almost.
Yeah.
With consuming.
Feels like they're under a spell.
Wow. Chihiro leaves and ends up, through many plot points that we won't get into.
And we should say, patently refuses to eat the food because it is not theirs.
That's she says, right.
No, this isn't ours. We shouldn't be eating it.
And her parents almost like try to get her to, oh, it's okay. The dad says, I have cash and credit cards.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, dad. Little humble brag there.
It's actually, I read up on this. That was very much a call on Americans, where Americans like, it doesn't matter, I got money.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah, he's also wearing a American-style polo shirt.
Yeah.
And drives an imported Audi car.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Interesting, Casey.
Yes.
You know a little bit more about this than you let on.
Well, it's only because they have a lot of interesting Wikipedia pages out there, Alex.
So Chihiro leaves and ends up working at a bathhouse.
Yes, finds herself in the spirit world, nonetheless.
A bathhouse for spirits. And she is a human and in the spirit world. And the main goal of her story is to escape and get her parents back.
Exactly. And so she works hard at the bathhouse to do that.
Yeah.
It was a very interesting tale because I was expecting, that there's a lot of, imagery and symbolism that kind of is peppered through.
Mm-hmm.
And I was right. Thank you very much. Everyone.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Yeah. But I was reading up on a lot of it because a lot of it also has to do specifically with Shinto.
Yes.
As an idea. And so each one of the spirits, or any of the spirits in the whole spirit world inside this bathhouse, mm-hmm. Which is where spirits go to essentially get themselves cleaned and have a little spa day.
Yep.
And then they leave and they go back to do whatever they're doing. And the whole thing is that you get to know this personification of the spirits of these other things that exist.
Mm-hmm.
So there was like a radish. I think it was a radish.
A radish spirit.
Spirit. Yep. Which I was like, that's what I love that. Like,
which is a thing that is real.
Is it really?
Yeah, but they don't look quite like this guy looks.
Oh, okay.
He looks like a big overgrown radish.
Yes. Yeah.
But they don't look like that in Shinto.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, radish don't, or the
radish spirits.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Because that's, I had no idea. Like,
yeah.
I've never given a thought of like, well, what do these spirits look like? I assume they are just of and by the things that they are.
Sure.
But of course there are things that are representative of it, but also like, what would that form be like? And they use their imagination to think, what would the form of a radish spirit look like?
Yeah.
If it became kind of personified, you know?
And he's very adorable. He's a little creepy.
Yeah, he is. You just can't trust him. And then you find out, like, as they go through the thing, he seems like he's kind of on her side.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, he for sure is. She, at one point, ends up, there's a, what they call a stink spirit.
Yes.
Originally. He's this big, like, muck monster comes in. This is probably my favorite sequence of the movie.
Yeah.
And where a big thematic point arises.
Yes.
This stink spirit, I'm putting in air quotes, gets a big bath.
Yeah.
And they end up pulling a, in the process of bathing the spirit, they end up pulling a bunch of mud covered garbage out of him.
It almost to me looks like the thorn in the lion. Isn't this a thing that happens somewhere? I think it's a lion. It might be an elephant.
Oh, the thorn in the lion's paw or
something? Exactly. Yeah, where you can't get it out. And so it's just like really angry and pissed off.
Yes.
And it just takes like one compassionate little creature to say, I'll pull that out for you.
Yes.
And then the lion becomes very happy and sweet again.
Yes.
This was a similar thing where there was one little like bit of a bicycle's I think, handlebars that at the time now it's Sen finds, because yes. now the witch who runs the bathhouse mm-hmm. Will take your name.
Yeah.
So she took the second syllable, the second symbol from her name.
Do you know about this?
I don't really. I okay. learned a little bit, but yeah, can you explain that real
sure.
fast?
Sure, yeah. Well, Chihiro signs her name on a contract to work at the bathhouse.
Yes.
Which is how Yubaba, the owner of the bathhouse, mm-hmm. controls the people who work there. She literally steals their name.
Yeah.
And she sort of does this magical hand wave above it, and the symbols, the characters, lift off the page, leaving one character.
Yeah.
And that is Sen, which is a part of Chihiro's name.
Exactly.
And Sen means 1,000.
Yeah.
And so I think the idea is that to her employees are just like, you're just a number now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So Sen is now this character, and Sen finds that little thing and says, oh, I see why you're so unhappy and stinky right now. Mm-hmm. And then everybody, including Yubaba says, wow, oh my gosh, we got to help out this spirit, our client. And then they like tie a rope around it and they pull it out, and it creates this cascade of trash and garbage.
Mm-hmm.
And then they blast out this certain like fancy infusion, right? And then what happens after that, Alex?
The real form of the spirit comes out.
And it's a river spirit.
Yes.
And the river spirit was polluted.
Yeah.
Ugh!
I know.
I love that.
It's amazing.
Yeah. It's like they need to cleanse the river of all the pollution that has destroyed it and turned it into a stink spirit.
And minor spoilers for this movie, by the way, if you haven't seen it. So if you want to go watch it, watch it now before we talk about the rest of this. Because... Yeah. You've been warned of spoilers.
You have spoiled.
You have spoiled. I'm going to throw you in the trash.
You are now a stink spirit.
River spirits in this movie are represented by Japanese style, I should say maybe Asian style dragons.
Yeah.
Which are more like snake-like.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the main characters, Haku, mm-hmm. who is another spirit who works at the bathhouse and is the one to help Chihiro escape.
Yeah.
It takes on the form of a dragon. And toward the end, Chihiro realizes that he is a river spirit and calls him by his real name, which is the name of the river that she knows him from.
Yeah. He saved her once.
Yes. He pushed her when she was drowning. He pushed her to the shore. And she says... she says the name of the river, and she says, that's all apartments now.
Yeah.
And
it's all apartments.
Casey, I thought of you because you have something that's been on your mind lately has been development. And there's been a development in, the story of this farm in, the Willamette Valley.
There's a new story that I was reading about last week. Yeah.
Yes. And you're very passionate about development. You worked for the mm-hmm. city for many years and are on the side of, you work for the people and the trees specifically. Right. So I thought about you when she said, and it kind of broke my heart when she said, that's all apartments now.
Yeah. There's no more river. The river's gone.
Which is why he doesn't know who he is and he's lost.
Exactly. I love that because that is, it's where it brings environmentalism and like other like ideas in Japanese culture to the forefront and marries it with their kind of indigenous religion, this mm-hmm. Shinto idea that there are spirits within everything, and if you crush something or you get rid of it, then you're getting rid of the spirit at the same time. You're not honoring that. And if you are contrasting that, specifically the movie does this quite a bit, contrast it against European and namely American consumerism, that obviously the parents literally turning into pigs as they are eating and looking like Western Americanized kind of people.
Yeah.
And this kind of clash of culture versus this clash of new age modern capitalism, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that this is a movie that is about that. Not to mention, this is something that I have run into a lot, is that it is from the perspective of a 10-year-old girl, like experiencing these things and coming of age and also learning about what it's like to, you know, see these things and understand spirits.
Yeah.
And so it's like more important, I think, that kids are taught these things rather than grow up and become a doctor and make millions of dollars.
Yeah.
Like to say, consider the spirits of everything else, you know, and that will get them, kids, to see things not as objects to be used, but as entities that exist in their own rights, that
absolutely
should be kept clean and beautiful, and that are like our spirits have spirits within them. So don't treat them just like trash, or else then you're just trashing the spirit.
Yeah, Casey, very well said. Miyazaki is legendary for a reason. His movies aren't just like cutesy animated movies.
Yeah.
They are so rich and so deep and have so much going on in them, both visually. This movie refreshes itself a lot. No, nothing ever gets like really boring, because there's just always like a new environment or a new room that they're in, or
yeah,
some sort of new visual thing happening. But they're also just like, the message in them is so beautiful and so clear. And I think it goes back to, we've talked about before, we're not Japanese experts or Japan experts, but we've talked about our, what we've noticed in Japanese culture, which is this sort of meeting, this crossroads of tradition and modern ideas.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And these movies are I would say these movies, all of them that I've seen, are a perfect representation of that.
Yeah.
They bring in a lot of traditional, you know, indigenous Japanese ideas, but then you have this modern 10-year-old girl experiencing all these things.
Yeah, right.
That was our discussion of Spirited Away. What a great movie.
Lovely film.
I also want to say, in terms of like, you know, we can have all these like philosophical discussions about Spirited Away and its themes and it's all this important shit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's also just very pleasant to watch. Mm-hmm. I put it on in the background sometimes while I'm like doing housework, and I'll just like walk by it and smile. You're like, oh, I love that funny turnip spirit.
Well,
so cute.
For the only thing that I want to ask you while we transition to our last segment,
yeah,
is this, Alex. How long do you think the car was parked there?
Now, this is interesting, because when she gets back to her parents, it's almost like a Narnia thing where it feels like it's been weeks.
Yeah.
But they're like, there you are. Come on. We're going to be late.
Yeah.
And they act like it's been 20 minutes.
Right.
So I think that there's like this interdimensional thing happening where she enters the spirit world, time moves differently. Time, you know, maybe time doesn't even exist.
Yeah.
The sun still rises and sets. There's like night cycles, whatever.
Yeah.
But when she gets back, I think once they went through that, and they say, he even says, this isn't old. This is like artificial. It's plaster.
Yeah.
This tunnel that they go through.
Yeah.
And at the very front of that tunnel is a stone spirit.
Yeah.
Marking the entrance to the spirit world,
mm-hmm.
a barrier. Mm-hmm. So I believe that she probably got out of the car in the real world, walk through that tunnel, and then like disappeared to go play.
Yeah. And then that's what they have. Like the forest kind of grows in. There's a bunch more moss over the front of it. Like, but it looks,
oh right,
it looks like it's been months.
Wow. I didn't even notice that.
Yeah.
Kate, when they're pulling away at the very, very end, driving back down the road that came.
Yeah.
There's lots of overgrown stuff.
Everything's overgrown. The initial wall, like you kind of see the bricks with the plaster on the top of it. Then when they leave, it's all covered in green, as in like the plants grew over the top of it. There's dust on the car. They make a note. There's like, the car's so dirty. Was it some kind of prank? Like leaves fell on it.
I completely missed that.
Yeah. So I'm curious, how long in the real world, in the parents' world, how long were they there? Because their whole thing is, we're going to be late we got to meet the movers.
Yeah.
And do you think that the movers are like, where the fuck, like, we just dropped your stuff off months ago.
Yeah, they've been foreclosed on by at this point.
Yeah, exactly. I'm very curious. They never touch it, but maybe this is just, I'm just a bad like spiritual person.
Well,
where I'm just like, now, how long has it actually been?
Anytime you get into like time travel or like spirit world, like there's going to be some like questions of like, well, how does that work?
It's very fair. Well, in the famous movie Inception, they cover that. It's like they give a timeline. You know how long it is.
God, what a terrible movie.
That movie's not terrible. Oh my God.
All right, Casey. That was our discussion of Spirited Away. We hope you enjoyed it. It is time for our completely arbitrary AMA.
Wow.
Casey, this is our first question from our brand new support platform, Completely Arbitrary Tremium. And our website for that has an amazing Q&A section where you can post a question, we can answer it, and then we'll send you basically it sends you an email once we say that we've answered the question with a timestamp to the episode in which it's placed.
Amazing.
It's great. Casey, this week's question is from...
Not Set.
We say that because we have a setting incorrect somewhere on our website, our new platform, where we cannot see who asked this question.
Yeah, we're working on some bugs here.
Yeah, we're smoothing out the folds.
Yeah.
But anyway, you will know it is you when you hear the question, and we thank you for this great question.
Love it.
Casey, hypothetically, if someone in the Pacific Northwest wanted to start producing delicious tree syrup in a few decades, what would be the best syrup to go all in on? And they say, if the answer is the sugar maple, would the syrup theoretically be as good as the stuff that comes out of the famous maple syrup production areas like New England and Canada? Or is there something special about that climate? Is there something in the water like New York pizza?
Yeah. Well, first off, why are they putting water in New York pizza, Alex?
It's this new trend. You get pizza and you get a glass of water and you pour the water on the pizza.
No shit.
It's really good. Huh. I don't know. Don't hate on it. Yeah,
sounds
it.
Really good. Sounds like something I'm definitely going to try. Definitely going to try.
What do you think, Case?
Well, the answer is, well, don't wait any decades. Just go do it right now on the big leaf maple. Yep, that is the newest, coolest thing.
West Coast cousin of the sugar maple, eh?
Yes, exactly. And they are very actively trying to do this. In fact, there is a whole group in Oregon trying to make maple syrup out of big leaf maples.
Wow.
Yeah, Oregon State University's got a whole thing that they're working on it.
Of course they do.
There's other people who've tried to do this. In fact, I think I just Googled it real fast, and there's a Nell's Big Leaf Maple Syrup thing that's in Washington. So it is here, and people are actively doing it. And apparently the flavor is just a little bit more zingy, I guess is the kind of term
zingy,
for it.
Zingy, okay.
Yeah, so every maple tree, every tree has its own kind of personal chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
And so the chemistry that adds certain flavors to or doesn't have certain flavors on a different species, you just have to figure that out by trying them. So
interesting.
They're all essentially the same sugars, like throughout trees, you know, the saccharine bits. It's all the photosynthetic sugars that the trees make. However, it just might be a little bit, I think, more robust. Like it's not quite so smooth, but I haven't tried it. This is just the things I've heard. So like you remember you and I had black walnut syrup?
Yeah.
And it was like intense.
It was really something.
Yes. This is the similar kind of
okay.
thing.
Okay. Yeah. I will say that was like, it almost tasted like they just concentrated it for too long.
Oh.
It was just like really pure concentrated syrup flavor.
Yeah. See, I think that is the same that they do with maple syrup from the sugar maple.
Yes, I'm sure that it's the same process. And I don't think they fucked it up. I just think like that was sort of like
the
taste impression that
gotcha.
I got.
Yeah.
It's just like very intense. Like a little goes a long way.
Exactly. And I think that's pretty similar for big leaf maple. But
interesting.
No one has sent it to us yet.
Wink, wink.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, get that done.
So yeah, how long do you reckon a big leaf maple, if I went out and planted a sapling today?
Yeah.
In its natural habitat here in the Pacific Northwest?
Uh-huh.
How long do you think it would take to get to the sugaring stage?
Ooh, I think they only need to be a few feet in diameter or a few inches in diameter, maybe 6 or 8. Like it doesn't need to get huge, but a 6 or 8 year old tree, big leaf maple, it's probably going to take you maybe 20 years to get there.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. But there are plenty that are already around. So if you happen to live somewhere that has big leaf maples already growing, which is a likelihood for sure, you could probably use them to make a little bit of syrup.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for your question, Not Set. If you've got a question for us, hey, wow, this is my first time saying join Completely Arbitrary Tremium. That's arbitrarypod.supercast.com. It is the best way to support this podcast. There are a couple different levels there. Annual subscriptions, gifted subscriptions, everything you would want as bonus material for Completely Arbitrary. I'll say, right. It kind of completes the compendium.
It really does. Yeah. And you can get extra episodes to hear all the other things that we don't necessarily get to talk about.
That's right.
You'll be surprised to hear that sometimes I talk too much about trees. And Alex says, we're just going to put that over here. And it works out really nicely.
A little side dish for the supporters.
Exactly.
Again, that is arbitrarypod, ArbitraryPod, pod.supercast.com. That link can also be found on our website, arbitrarypod.com, and in the bio of our Instagram, at arbitrarypod.
You can find us, is what we're saying.
Just Google it.
You'll get there. You can find us.
Casey...
Alex Croson.
What a great way to start Triazaki.
I'm having a great time so far.
I am too. I cannot wait for next episode.
What is next episode going to be?
Next episode, we are going to be talking about the classic My Neighbor Totoro.
Oh, Totoro.
Probably the cinematic character that I resonate most with, Totoro.
Oh, really?
This big, fuzzy, friendly person, creature. That wants to sleep all day.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, all right. That does feel a lot like Alex Croson. Okay, this is going to be good. My neighbor Alex.
Yes, my neighbor Alex. And my neighbor Casey. And
yeah.
These neighbors, will see you next time, sweet listeners.
Goodbye. Completely Arbitrary is produced by Alex Croson and Casey Clapp.
Our artwork is by Jillian Barthold, and our music is by Aves and the Mini Vandals.
And you can support the podcast at patreon.com/arbitrarypod.
And find additional readings at completelyarbitrary.com. Thanks for listening.